Hey everyone, my name is Francisco Escobar, and welcome to Conversamos. As we continue our second season, focusing on La Familia and Latinidad, this episode is going to be on co-parenting. Stay tuned as Latin Entertainment presents Conversamos.
Is it that wrong? I'm making a song, I'm taking it back for the platform that I form. Use your chopper to transform. I run the reservoir, the predator, like a hungry carnivore when I'm breaking through these heads.
Before we announce our panel, we'd like to promote this episode's business spotlight. Agua Cali Fresca, a California-based business that sells homemade agua frescas and chamoy. Check them out and follow the account at Agua Cali Fresca, that is Ali Cala Fresca. Now, let me introduce you to our panel. We have Claudio Juarez and Abigail Tarango. Thank you two for joining us. And now with our first question, how would you describe your experience co-parenting?
My experience has been both good and bad, as it should be. I think we learn a lot from those experiences. Although I've been a mother for almost 17 years, I feel like my true co-parenting really only began 5 years ago. And the reason I say that is that it's a long journey to understand co-parenting and to really be able to do it gracefully. And I say the word grace on purpose because it takes a lot of grace with oneself, but then also with the co-parent. You know, co-parenting has been quite the experience. If you can ever think of the most kind of selfless love and ability to kind of have every level of sympathy and empathy and higher self of one, you know, a being, it's required of co-parenting, especially when it's child-centered. And I think that that's an important word to really talk about today is how do you do it in a way that is always child-centered? And we can probably get into that because you have some great questions, but my experience has been very, very adventurous. So I'll keep it brief there.
Yeah. For me, I would say number one, it's been a process, and there's kind of two sides to it. Your own self evolution to get to being able to work together, and like you said, it does take a long time to get there. And then also the process of being a parent from a distance because you're not with your child all of the time. So I think those are the two thought process, your self-growth. And as a man, I think number one, learning to curb my tongue because I can spit acidic acid in terms of being vulgar. And I think you have to learn to grow to take the emotion out of it and really think things through to realize you are two folks raising a child and they have to be number one. But the thinking about how the other person might view decisions and really learning how to make peace for the benefit of the child.
Thank you. And to the Abigail's point about, like, because you also mentioned it as well, Claudio, about children-centered. So for Abigail, what has that experience been like, and what are some, like, how has it been navigating and understanding that?
Yeah, you know, I'll give you some background. I was, I worked for Texas A&M as a county extension educator, and one of my jobs in 2003 was to teach a 9-hour course on co-parenting. And at the time, I was still married and going through the separation and all of that. And the judge orders most people that go through divorce that have children through a co-parenting course. And people can do it online, but if you can do it in person, it's, you know, a full day. And the irony of that entire experience was that, and you guys are going to be shocked if you don't know this already, is that a lot of our court systems navigate from these spaces, from really old paradigms. And so the curriculum that the domestic relations office was using with their social workers was really for lack of a better way, messed up. I mean, it was teaching things like, you know, the woman messed up. I mean, literally, this is the vernacular. The woman messed up. Now you're in this situation. And how are you going to communicate to her what needs to be done for the child? And you're reading this curriculum going, is this for real? Like, in some of the paradigms or some of the ways that they present information is 70s, 80s. It's a trip. And so I went to, it is crazy. And so I remember going to not only my bosses, but the county judge. And at the time it was Escobar. And I mean, and I just was like, this is unacceptable. There's no way for us to create child-centered experiences and really try to help these co-partnerships, co-parenting by perpetuating some of these things. Because even if we're not teaching it, it's still in print in front of them.
Yeah.
And so we did try to rewrite a lot of it, but it just made me wonder if I was the first to really call it out and notice it in 2003, and this was in my county, how much more is it happening everywhere, all over the place, in many different ways and forms? And so it made me really think about, as much as I wanted to be amicable, as much as I wanted to be a good co-parent, not only within our own systemic ways, but also how do we internalize that? And I really liked what you said earlier about taking emotion out, because it's an emotional journey. Yeah. I mean, no matter which way you dice it, if your intentions mm-hmm. are good, if you're amicable, having children and then co-parenting requires a lot of emotion. It just does.
Yeah.
And so understanding that emotion and then understanding what to do with that emotion and then understanding how to express it without conflict, it's nuts. And I like the question that you ask about child-centered, because it sounds easy, right? It sounds like, oh, well, that's common sense. That's easy.
Yeah.
But it's not that easy, because you're an adult with two parents that are choosing to not raise the child, and then you're compromising time with the child. And I often describe not having my children with me as like walking around without like a whole limb, like arm and leg, not just the arm, but like, and trying to get by that week that way, because it's so debilitating. I mean, it really is. And I think something that's important to call out, and I'm sure it's the safest space, but I got to call it out because I've never been able to say it anywhere. When your friends or your family's like, oh, que suave, you get a week off without your kids and stuff. Oh, that is the worst thing you can say to someone who is parenting. I mean, talk about like a dagger in the, where it hurts the most, because it's not a break. It's not anything nowhere near that. And it's a very important thing that we say it out loud, because mm-hmm. we should be sensitive and aware that people that want to co-parent, that want to have child-centered divorces and parenting, they're not doing it because it's fun and because that's what they chose. Yeah. They're doing it for other things. And it's very, very hurtful in the way that you want to defend yourself, but you can't make people understand your journey.
Yeah.
And so I say that in this very safe space that I've always wanted to say it out loud. And so I'm really happy, because it's therapeutic for me to say, don't tell co-parents that they get a break, because it's nothing of the sort. It's really difficult. And I'm into it 5 years of true co-parenting, and it doesn't get any easier. And I can't imagine that it will. Now I'm just in the accepting phase. But child-centered is difficult, but it's when you can do it truly authentically, it does alleviate a lot of the hard emotions and the really difficult things. It allows you to do it in a healthier space.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for sharing, Abigail and Claudio.
Well, I feel the same way that she does, so we're good. No, that was a good one, but I think in terms of your journey, we never went through the court. So my son's mother and I, we dated 6 months. She ended up pregnant, and it went the route of trying to make it work out. So obviously everybody knows when you have a relationship and trying to still get to know each other, going from a party fun lifestyle to all of a sudden moving in together, trying to make it work. There's so many emotions, there's so many things of getting to know each other, and then add the child, that's so many extra layers of stress. So the journey was different because it was just like, okay, you're together because of the child and you're going to raise, you're going to bring life and you have to show them the way. And then about a year and a half ended up going separate ways, and it was just working through those emotions. And that was a difficult thing because growing up in a Latino household, you stay together no matter what, the family's the core. I was blessed enough that my parents are still together, but that's just the way it was. And kind of when you were speaking about the antiquated lessons that you're learning in kind of that course,
yeah,
it's, you have to make it work out, you know, and it's like, what do you do? And you go through a depression because you're used to your child every day and internalize, how do you deal with those emotions? Obviously there's times that I would wake up and say, you know what, let me fire off this atomic bomb text for the hell of it. And I, you know, the reaction is going to come. So it's going through those childish ways that you have to, because that's the way we express ourselves. And I was blessed enough that one of Cisco's and myself's fraternity brother in Chicago, he was going through a separation at the same time. So that really helped my mental state to know somebody's going through it and really leaning on them and having that safe space to express myself and kind of go that way. And then one of the biggest lessons that I learned that I was told is never post on social media the feelings, because the moment that the world is involved or open to it, we see it with celebrities and athletes from a sports perspective, you know, contracts and stuff. But that was one of the smartest advices, not to open up what you're going through in detail and really how you're feeling. And then obviously that was 2013, the separation. My son was born 2012. And just really kind of until, I would say 2015, but it a lot more, I'm emotionally driven. His mother's like a plan, and like most women, stable mentally, and they plan out, compared to I would just jump into it, you know, emotion there. And it's gotten to a blessing now where 90% of the time everything is great, but then the human element where the disagreement goes into. But it takes time, it's a process, and the child-centered, you know, the core of the question, it's hard to go straight to that answer. But once you figure out how to control your emotions and really understand what has occurred, you can always go to getting to the point of, my child will never question, is he loved? So I think that's how you, and that's his head that just popped in. So I think that's where you keep it. It's just knowing that you love them and let them know, and never speak negatively about the other parent in front of them, so that they're never exposed to like what's going on. And I think that helps to keep it child focused.
So I really like how you brought up like social media, and then also saying that like never argue or show negative feelings towards the other parents in front of the child. Abigail, would you mind sharing a bit brief on your relation to that, if there is one?
Yeah. You know, so I really like this kind of, you have a different perspective, because I think it gives people a range of, there's no cookie cutter experience. It comes in many different ways. And I often think about my family and the own guilt that comes with a Latino family, and then all the things that I carry within my own self, right? There's just these, you know, just things that are ingrained in us. And what I think was both the blessing and the curse is that no one knew that I had been going through these things, because I was very private. Because in our household, you know, you don't, in Spanish, they talk about your laundry, right? Like, you know, no vas a sacar la ropa. And so it comes with so many layers of things. And so I want people to really understand that there isn't like a special sauce or a special recipe or a quick fix. I think that when it comes to social media, when it comes to even in private behind closed doors, that this process just is a process, and no one can rush it or even try to check any box through it. It's very independent and almost isolating. And I know that we have, you know, we have safe, you said you had someone that you can kind of talk with and stuff, but even at that, no one really knows what you're personally going through. And there's often yep. nights where you're alone with your own feelings and emotions. And I would caution people to not be afraid to sit with those feelings. It's hard. And to be afraid to really face themselves in the mirror. One of the things that I always tell people is that number one, if you can't do anything else, because emotions and it's crazy and it's new, words matter. And so if you do nothing else, watch your words, how you speak. So one of the first, and I call her Bruja because she knows, like, she calls you out just by your energy, and you're just like, she told me that one of the first times I ever met her, she said, I think I said something like, oh yeah, my ex-husband. And she goes, why do you call him your ex-husband? I go, because he's my ex-husband. And she said, your children's father. And I was like, whoa. And it really changed a lot for me. So the way we speak about things and the words that we use really have power. And so if you can do nothing else, just to begin your journey, watch how you speak about things, what words you use to describe them. So by saying something as simple as saying my children's father, and see, I even got chills right now, it's empowering, and it's actually, it's a beautiful thing, as opposed to living in that space of deficit, right? Like, you're always kind of, you already feel emotional, so why add to that? Yeah. And then once you graduate from being aware of words and how you use them and how you describe them, whether it's publicly or privately or in your own self, your self-talk is so important. Once you kind of get the hang of that, then watch your energy, because your energy, like you said, the atomic bombs that you were blasting, that was your energy, right? But we all have, and it's so crazy how much it really can be. And I love atomic bomb, because I remember those nights that I got atomic bombs, and I was like, and I'm not perfect. I definitely set off a couple of little baby bombs here and there too, but your energy is so important. And the reason energy is even more important is that your children, doesn't matter what age, they feel it. They feel it. Like, they don't even have to be around you or even in your home or their home. They are like absorbent of it. And so when I went through it, they were much younger, and now they're older. And I've been able to now see in the last couple of years the effects of a lot of that stuff. And I try not to live in the guilt of it. I try to live in the healing of it and understanding of it, because you're amazed at what they feel and what they sensed and what you did, you thought you, because you cannot argue in front of them, but they still know. There's energy there. So if I said nothing else about anything else today, I would say your words matter, because words become thoughts, becomes energy, right? And then your energy absolutely matters as you kind of go through your own process.
Now to our next question. What messages have you learned from your parents about parenting?
I think, kind of, Cisco, we were talking about it before, kind of the evolution of parenting, because before it was work, 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 save, come home, kind of just go through that repeat. And I was blessed enough, my dad, he came to this country at 17 years old, cleaning toilets, worked his way up to be an executive chef. Oh, that's Javier and that's Maximo. And kind of worked through it. So I know, because we're just talking about being a dad to children like yourself.
So that you can teach me better stuff.
Yeah, I hope I can teach you better stuff so you listen. Oh, and then that's number one, is like always having, obviously teaching him kind of not interrupting adults, but having the attention to them that they aren't just being there, and you're like, I'm on the phone, social media. That is Fresh Pet. That's other doggies. So I think from being there, the one core that was always that we would always have dinner together, no matter what time my dad got home. So the family core was always important, and I've taken that. And I hated it as a kid, because I'd be like, I ate earlier. I don't want to sit here. And my dad would get home 10, 11. Everybody gets up, has a bowl of cereal, even if they're eating dinner. So that's what I've taken into parenting now. So the value of being a parent, and we're different now. Obviously, I have a bunch of tattoos compared to my dad, hates them. So I think just the connection of being connected to knowing what they're doing. Obviously, they're going to be sneakier than us, just as we were with our parents. So trying to be super involved there. And I think just really be that emotion that we do have as, at least as a dad, that it is okay to feel emotion compared to in the 70s and the 60s where like a man's not, man doesn't cry, you know, just the heart and the mother's the emotional comfort. So I think those are the things that I've taken and kind of where I've adjusted to myself as being a parent to hopefully I can be a friend, but on the parental tip where he'll be open.
Maybe sharing an Abigail?
Yeah, no, I think he addressed a lot of the really, you know, the things that we, the ways that we come with this, you know, it's like we bring our own backpack, but then we got to open up this backpack. So, you know, the only thing I would add is in my particular case, I have a cultural and ethnicity divide, right? So they're Mexican American like me, mm-hmm. and then their father is white from like the mountains and very different cultures. And while we were raised within a border community, there's still a lot of differences. And I think just adding to not only our own families and the cultures and traditions that we grew up with, but then also being kind of sensitive to other ways of being, right? So, you know, while we want to complement each other's parenting styles, we're not a couple and we're co-parenting. So how do we do that in a way that's complementary, but we don't feel threatened when we do it different ways, right? And it's a balance. It's really a balance because you got to pick and choose those battles, and there's not a better way or a worse way. It's just different. And so while I try to be more gifting of the things we offer from this side of family, I try not to, you know, create a space where it's less than whatever is going on in that part, right? So it's you have to be aware of those things. And I think also my children have a lot of questions about who they want to be and what they want to be like. And I feel like in some ways I've now given them, based on the decisions I've made to have two separate households, I've given them choices. Whereas before, you know, I'm total traditional Latina. Like I liked his football game. You know, I made his favorite food, even if it wasn't carne molida con papas. Like I was very traditional in the way I loved. And I was trying to kind of serve that authentic self. And now it's like, how do I be my authentic self in a way that shows loving, caring, but without a partner, right? So it's the way that I do it is I honor their father, despite us not being together. I honor, you know what, he likes this and he does this and this is what he values, and try to do it in those ways, because at the end of the day, our children, their experiences are so different from how we grew up. I mean, they just are. And we have to figure out little ways in which to share the same kind of sentiments, but we don't have to feel bad that they're not like we're sitting down at dinner every day. Sometimes I feel guilty about that, you know, like we're not doing these things that I did when I grew up. And I have to kind of temper that, because just because I'm not doing it the way I grew up doesn't, and it took a long time for me to get there, because I was kind of felt like a failure, like what, why, you know, it didn't work out the way I wanted to. And now I feel like, you know what, they're going to be just fine. And not only are they going to be fine, they have all of this selection of life and ways of being that they can choose, you know, so.
Yeah.
Audio, yeah.
Yeah, I think you said it greatly where they have all of this life and the views, but when you're co-parenting, the other element that goes is also that if one of the two parents gets into a future relationship, you know, it's just like myself, I'm engaged now and be getting married. We're supposed to get married this year, but due to COVID, we're moving it to next year. But I was always strong with, I never wanted to introduce my child just to anybody. And I think that's where you spoke about that feeling they know. It was one of those where at the end of the day, the way what he views is ultimately how he's going to treat his mother. So it's getting to that self-realization of you have an even bigger responsibility from the co-parenting perspective. And obviously out of respect for the other parent, you want to have their views on life still in a positive. And then also to get to that level from a co-parenting perspective, that you look at it as there will be more folks and more people that will love them. And I think that's where the emotion comes into effect also, because it is difficult thinking when you first separate, how will another person be involved? How will that affect? Will my role be diminished? And Abigail, you spoke about still respecting the other parent and having them included, is having the child know that they were created in love. There was love at one point, but it's different from being in love and loving. We all know those definitions and those feelings, but it's just, I think, the communication, and they're not blind to it. So I think addressing it and having them understand that is very important too. And getting to that happy where you can coexist together, and calendars are
calendars.
It's a lot of work. I was gonna say that is the number one, I think. It's figuring that out, because you'll go to a certain schedule and say this works now, and all of a sudden life goes into effect with a job or anything, and then you have to work with the other parent to say, okay, how do we work now before it was all over, right? Now we switch every Saturday, you know?
Yeah, calendars. You know, it's funny, right? When you're not in these situations, you don't really think about the nuances of it all. But when you're in it, there are some very, like you have to, like, have a calendar. And you have to be flexible, but not flexible. And, I mean, it's
not being intense. Taken advantage, flexible.
Yeah, it's, you know, and then there's hours and minutes and days. And, you know, all of it, though, like, honestly, all of it, no matter how much a parent out there is listening, feels anxious and despair and all of these emotions and feelings, right? No matter what, the second you honestly, authentically release to the idea that this is child-centered, everything does get better. And it's incredible, right? But you have to be authentic about it. Like, you really just have to be in that space. And I think sometimes we think we're in that space, and we're trying to navigate, and your emotions counter what your actions are saying and what your words are saying. So you just, if I could just say to everyone listening, get to a place, a healthy place internally within your own self that can genuinely, authentically be child-centered. And all the little nuances, all the hardships, the pain, the hurt, they all lessen. They really do. And that's part of the journey, right? That's the process. Getting there is the process, but you don't have to. It's kind of like seeing a big ass mountain and seeing the treacherous hike, right? But you also know that you can easily also just go in your car and drive up, right? And you choose to do the treacherous hike. And it's like, why would anyone choose that? But we all do it. We're all like, well,
we all self-sabotage.
Because we got to go do it this way, right? But the scenery along the drive, I promise you, is just as beautiful if you can drive the car that is child-centered. And I know that's a silly analogy, but the only way I can explain it is truly that you have to authentically live and be in that space.
Yeah. Yeah, you were just saying made me just kind of think back about that journey and getting to that place of ultimate calmness, you know, being able to work together. Is when we had first separated, I remember one week, and it was that light bulb moment for me that we had gotten into it, and then I had my son that weekend, and it was literally just festering upon that after I took him back that Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever the schedule at that time was, it was just literally the look back of the whole weekend was just short. I was snappy, giving myself self ulcers. And that was the moment, part of the journey, that you're like a wasted weekend. And you think, you're like, if I weren't here, what would be the last one? Like,
Yeah.
What occurred, I was just angry, you know? So that's the, to get past that, number one, work through that inner anger somehow, some way, because the faster you get to that peace, the faster your kids see the happiness.
Yeah.
And then ultimately the faster it is to be able to work together. There's always hiccups. It doesn't get easy, but the hiccups aren't as brutal as in the beginning when you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So for our next question, what messages are you teaching to your child or children? We can go with Abigail and then Claudio.
Man, I'm going to let Claudio go first because
Number one is you never mean to girls, especially for my young. That's number one that we're teaching is you're not mean to girls, especially that, but that now we have a blended family, so it's having him understand that there's more people to love him, but it's also following the rules, listening, and then also being in line with what his mother's thoughts are. So my son's mom and my fiance, they're planners, they're very alike in terms of maturity calendars and really understanding. So I really lean on them for organization, especially my fiance. So it's allowing her to also discipline him, because we're all part of his life. So it's listening to adults. Those are the core ones. And from a cultural perspective, it's showing him the flags, where his abuelos are from, the language, getting him integrated there. And I think that's when you were speaking about the difference in culture. When he's with myself, or if he's visiting anybody from my side, we're teaching Spanish, and then it's almost as if it goes to nothing supported there because she doesn't speak Spanish, and then comes back and you're trying to double time there. So it's being culturally aware of the education of how beautiful the Latino culture is, but without him really understanding it at now 8 years old. So I think it's the core of how to be a gentleman, and then listening to adults, and then the cultural education.
And then adding that every age adds a different, every stage, every age.
How old are your children?
So I have a 12, 14, and 16-year-old. And they're about to turn 17, 15, and 13. And it goes really fast, like really, really fast. And so I think every stage, like right when you think you got the hang of it, like, okay, they're listening to adults, they're saying please and thank you, and they're 8 years old or whatever it is, it changes. And so I've had an elementary school, middle school, and a high schooler, and in every one of those personalities and their stages and their ages, right when I think I got it down, and they came back, you know, from going 1 week there, 1 week here, and, you know, reshifting there, it constantly changes. And as I used to carry this really, like, it used to be, it's heavy, it's hard, right? Now I'm actually kind of going, I bring it, like, bring it, what's next? Because my attitude has changed, because I feel like my time's running out, like, they're growing up, and it's an urgency, right? So adding to the trying to help my two older sons, young men of color, you know, they're single mama, you know, how to help me, how to be there, how to respect me, what are my needs, how to be good listeners, how for me to be a good listener, whatever their stages are, they have girlfriends. I mean, there's just, we can get a cookie jar and fill it with just different things, right? But then my daughter is the youngest, and, you know, she, even just the other day, you know, I dated once throughout this journey, and eventually brought him into our lives. And she says to me, and we're not together anymore, she says to me, Mom, are you going to date? And I said, no, probably not for a while. She goes, good. She goes, I can't go through that again. And, you know, for a 13-year-old girl, I mean, my heart, like, even right now, I can just feel it, because your children are still, they're human, they're people, and they're getting older, and they fall in love with people that come into their lives. And it's really hard to kind of navigate through that, but there are lessons in all of that, right? So as they get older and as they go in through their difficulties, there's no like, you never know what you're going to be teaching, because every day, like the news that we've been watching, the COVID, being at home with them since March carries its own lessons. And, you know, I think for me, my go-to always is they're watching me. I know they're watching me, how I react to things, how I speak about things, how I handle their father, how I handle job, you know, work or whatever, or phone calls. They're watching me. And so my go-to is there's no better lesson than to be the best possible mama and person and woman and friend and worker than I can be, knowing that they're watching, and it doesn't matter what age they are. So I guess all of that is to say, I'm so glad to not be in the table manners talk, but I'm not like afraid of bringing the, you know, son, you using protection because you're 17. Like, it's just crazy how your life changes and shifts and stuff. But you know, ultimately it's a blessing, man, to have these three people in my life that are my children. And it's incredible to be, have the privilege of being their mama.
The number one, where they're always watching. No matter what we do, they're watching how we react. And I get my attention called from Nikki. That's my fiance's name. And she was always like, he's watching. And it's, you know, either being on the telephone, like all of those things that you almost walk around aimlessly, not realizing you have to be a lot more self-aware. And then I'm blessed enough to have a strong woman remind me of when I have to get back in line. But it's, you know, it's that they're always watching. And you brought a great point where it's even tougher from the single parent perspective, because if you date somebody that doesn't have children, it's hard to understand where the time becomes limited, because God forbid something happens, like time stops, you have to go there. So a lot of props goes to folks that go into a step parent role, because that's extremely difficult too. And that entire is a whole nother, that might be a good topic, Cisco, of the step parent life and how to adjust that, because there's so many people that go through it, like where do you fit, you know? And I think it's just being open, you know, like your daughter actually, will you date her again? And you're like, I don't know. I think it's just, you know, having those open conversation and real with them, because it does affect them. And, you know, you've experienced it yourself where no longer together, that's an impact in the child's life. So there's so many different facets, things that you have to think about that you would have never thought that you had to think about from there. So I think you said it correctly. They're always watching, always, even though when I don't realize it.
If I could just add something. And you know, this could be another total topic, but when you go through like divorce, separation, or even, you know, co-parenting road, people tend to think, I'm going to call them and ask their opinion on my life. And it's almost like an open calling card, right? Like, I don't know why people do that, but they do. And I've had over the years, a lot of really great people reach out to me for just my opinions and stuff. And I always say the same thing to them. I always say, number one, if it's non-negotiables, then that's you know, you're non-negotiables.
Yeah.
But if you can make it work, you know, fight for it. It's worth it. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's, you know, especially if you have kids. And then more importantly, for me, it was always, have you thought about what life is going to be like? Because I don't think most people really think about the daily. You know, on the daily, to give your kid for the week to someone that you loved but are now in strife with is really difficult. Or to figure out, okay, for the week I'm going to have my kids, what's childcare look like? And sometimes people even use that to go, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be so complicated and so hard. And it actually kind of gets them to really think about how much life changes when you make these decisions, right? And at the end of the day, you know, we all know what's best for ourselves, just despite, you know, how hard it is and everything. But when you really try your best to kind of reflect on the nuances of the day, the feelings, the emotions, everything that comes with it, I think it changes and shifts your perspective a little bit about the decisions that, that you're making. I try to go into like my higher self. Like if I'm struggling with something or I'm reactive to something, I know that that's more like my personality and my characteristics, as opposed to my higher self is going, let me have a thoughtful action, not a reaction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, if I'm just reacting to it, then it's probably not a good idea. But if it's a thoughtful, deliberate action, then it's good for my kids, it's good for me, it's good for the co-parents. So, I just wanted to say that because step-parents go through their own challenges and stuff, and adding more people into your into really the world of loving your child is complicated and stuff. So all of those things are important.
Thank you all for sharing. Now to our last question, what advice do you have for parents who are starting in their co-parenting journey?
It gets better if it came, not it gets better, because obviously different personalities, different situations, different levels of hurt, you know, from the past relationship. But if you're willing to take a step back and really say, what do I have to do to get better for myself so that I'm a better example to my child? I think that's, you have to first think of that and then swallow your pride. I think that's number one at certain times. Watch your tongue. And just really address to the other parent that, like, hey, we got to get to this end level somehow. Like, we have to get there because it's going to be hell for the rest of your life. And nobody honestly wants that at all. And I think once you address that and you realize that the ones that do get wealthy are the attorneys going back and forth from court. Nothing against attorneys, I have a bunch of friends that are them, but you know, you can utilize those funds for the child, either college, but other things. But I think it's just looking at yourself first and say, where do we need to get to? And like, we need to come up with a plan to be able to get there, essentially waving the white flag and say, we got to get there somehow.
I think that the attorney comment was spot on. I think you have to be careful to not allow others to influence according to you. Sometimes that could be your own parents, your own family, your friends. I mean,
yourself.
Yeah, you got to be careful. You almost got to like really be protective of that space. It's a divine space. You're a parent. You got to be a good parent, and there's no way about it. So you got to protect that. And so sometimes, whether it's attorneys or whatever, people are always telling you what to do, how to feel, los tres días no es suficiente. And you're like, what? Like, you know, it's just always something, you know. And so everyone has opinions, and it's wonderful, but it could be detrimental because, you know.
Yeah.
Number one, protect that space. It's sacred. It's yours. And you only get really one shot at
it.
And do it well. And then once you're able to kind of protect that space, then really start doing the work of healing. Because if you can't heal, I almost want to take away the comment of swallow your pride, because I think everyone deserves a sense of orgullo and pride and sense of self, but with healing involved, right? Because and everyone's healing journey is different. It's, you know, for me, it took years, and I feel like I'm still going through it, but being aware of where I'm hurt and how I need to heal to be my best self allows me to be a better mother, a better co-parent, a better person. And honestly, do the work. Do the work that is involved in healing. If you need a therapist, go get a therapist. If you need to read books, read books. If you need to journal, whatever that is for you, do the work, because there's nothing like arriving in a space where you have peace, and then you can then make better decisions based on what that feels like, as opposed to, you know, these bombs that, you know, we all shoot off and stuff like that. But yeah, that would be my recommendation. Be protective of the space, and then do the healing, do the work so that you can do it well.
With that said, that is all the time that we have. Thank you everyone for joining us. For everyone at home, make sure you like the video, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also comment below, how has your experience co-parenting, whether as a child or parent? Then follow us on all our social media outlets at @LatinEntertainment_presents. That is @LatinEntertainment_presents. Also, you can listen to us on our various podcast platforms that vary from Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts, just to name a few. Lastly, our next episode, in conjunction with this It All Starts at Home season, is going to be on adopting Indigenous children. Thank you all for your time, and see you on the next episode as Latin Entertainment presents Conversamos.
Yeah, yo, is it that wrong? I'm making a song, I'm taking it back for the platform that I formed. You should chop it and transform. I run the reservoir, the predator, like a hungry carnivore. When I'm breaking through these heavy doors, this is Desert Storm. A metaphor to show, I'm equipped and informed. I'm striking with the mega force, I'm lukewarm. You're